I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's Christmas!
Mistletoe and wine, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to number 6 of our 12 Rambles of Christmas.
Are those children singing in Christian rhyme?
With logs on the fire and gifts in the tree.
Time to rejoice with the good that we see. Yeah, okay.
Jim, you know the one?
Christmas time, silent night.
It's Mistletoe Wine, Cliff Richard.
Yeah, I try to avoid Cliff.
To you.
Very much Cliff.
There was an amazing piece of unintentional arrogance by Sir Cliff once, where do you remember he released that song, which was the Lord's Prayer?
Oh, yeah.
So the theme tune of Auld Lang Syne.
That's it.
And he was asked about it, and he said, you know, like all of my genius ideas, it just happened to be the most simple.
I hate him.
Go on, Cliff.
I hate him.
What about that Wimbledon thing he did?
Smug. Smug, unnecessary and annoying.
I think that
tennis is better than you, Cliff, even when there isn't any tennis.
He's a British Elvis.
I think he should appear at the Hague for that Wimbledon thing.
I'm with you.
It's the worst thing ever.
Number 12 is the investigation of Cliff... Sorry. Number 6 of the 12 Rambles of Christmas is nothing to do with Cliff Richard, I can promise you, ladies and gentlemen, but it is to do with an individual.
Okay.
It's the cult of Jose Mourinho, and I did say cult.
And it is a cult.
Yes.
And he is a... Yeah.
And we're all in it. We're all in it.
If you don't like Jose Mourinho, do stick around, because we might give both sides of the coin.
But that's the point, isn't it? There are lots of sides of the coin with Jose.
And I think it maybe is a touch too early to officially declare this the business end of the countdown.
Yeah.
But it's up there. Mm. And I think the reason it's up there in our ranking is because Jose Mourinho is the manager that probably sort of defines the Rambles' longevity era, or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be grandiose and call it the Ramble era, but you know what I mean? More than any other manager.
Yes.
And he is absolutely looming large wherever you go in football, whatever you discuss at any time, both here and in the US when we did a radio show in the US. Everyone wanted to talk about
him. He was box office, wasn't he? The phones would light up the moment we mentioned him, and it was every time.
We didn't mention him. People wanted to ring in and talk to
It's all people wanted to talk about Jose all the time.
He lights those phone lines up like a pinball machine.
He is the epitome of the modern manager, isn't he? The modern elite manager in how often he moves and how, you know, the type of profile of player that he wants and what he can do for a club.
He's one of the most famous men in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
Because when you go to certain parts of the world, they may not know some Hollywood film stars or whatever. They know footballers. But Mourinho, he's not a footballer and never quite cut the mustard as a footballer. So he makes up for that in the dugout and in the press conference especially.
He was one of the first managers that I can remember that where everyone was like, he's never kicked a ball, pretty much.
Yeah, him and Arrigo Sacchi would be the two.
Sven?
No, I think, I don't know about Sven's playing career. Did he play?
Similar, I think he played, didn't he?
Only very low level, similar to Mourinho.
Yeah, I mean, Mourinho played in the second division in Portugal, didn't he? But
he played for Rio Ave, I think, but not in any real...
In his mid-20s, he realised it's a coaching career.
But I think, because what tends to happen is people will put him in the same, I guess as part of the earlier part of his era in England, people would bracket him up with Ferguson and Wenger and say they didn't have careers. But Wenger won the league with Strasbourg, and Ferguson had a good goal-scoring season with Rangers and managed and played a lot of different places. Mm. But Ferguson was a legitimate, good professional forward.
Yeah.
And Wenger's a league title-winning player.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's slightly different. That, it's slightly different.
And he speaks Japanese.
But I watched back a documentary, probably would have been made a year after Mourinho, because when he won the league title with Chelsea in 2004-05, I think the documentary was made just after that, and it was with Gary Lineker, and it was called The Special One. And it's absolutely fascinating to see. It's on YouTube. Fascinating to see how, and I'm sure you're going to come on to how he sort of burst onto the scene in England, but how differently he is perceived now to what he was then. It's night and day. Absolutely unbelievable.
Well, they used to talk a lot about his preparation and his dossiers he used to make before every match. Nobody talks about that now, if indeed he still does that.
Well, I think that's because his influence is such that everybody does that now.
Yeah. In a Wenger-type thing with the nutrition and the forward-thinking tactics. Okay, right.
But they're not having drunk players.
Perhaps you're saying this because this is all pre-applying for the Barcelona job.
Right, okay.
And
right.
That is the crucial moment in the career of Jose Mourinho. Mm. Because you're right, Luke. Beforehand, when he was Bobby Robson's translator, but to call him just a translator is...
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big anomalies, isn't it? I think that probably factors into his frustration here, because from what I've read about that, Bobby Robson obviously was a very, very astute manager, and attacking play was his stuff. So he would almost hand over the defensive organisation of that Barcelona team to Jose Mourinho. Yep.
I've got a Robson quote here about his first encounter with Jose Mourinho, one of his first encounters. He says, he'd come back and hand me a dossier that was absolutely first class. I mean, first class. Talking about tactic, other teams, scouting and stuff. He said, as good as anything I've ever received. Here he was in his early 30s, never been a player, never been a coach to speak of either, giving me reports as good as anything I'd ever received before.
I mean, that's incredible. And on the same lines.
And his name was Carl Cott.
After Bobby Robson, it was Louis van Gaal who came in at Barcelona around that time, certainly. And on Bobby Robson's recommendation, Van Gaal took Mourinho on as a sort of a third assistant. And a wonderful quote from Van Gaal said that he found Jose Mourinho to be an arrogant young man. Van Gaal calling someone else arrogant. who didn't respect authority that much. But I did like that of him. He was not submissive. Used to contradict me when he thought I was in the wrong. Finally, when I wanted to hear what he had to say, I ended up listening to him more than the rest of my assistants.
Did you think
that is
say,
high praise.
He very much reminded me of myself.
Yeah.
but Mourinho's, the first time, I don't know if you guys would share this, the first time Mourinho came into the consciousness of English football fans, I think more broadly, would have been this 2004 season when, with his Porto team, he knocked Man United out of the Champions League and then went on to win it.
Well, he did manage Porto when they beat Celtic.
Okay,
would have been still the UEFA Cup.
I hate to break this to you, mate. That wasn't quite as big in the consciousness.
No, but people might have heard it because the way his team behaved in that final.
Yeah, true.
It was part of a treble, too.
Yeah, but I'm not talking...
Not his first treble, not his last one.
This is not a profile of a Jose Mourinho.
No.
But what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, you've got to lay the foundations.
I'm not levelling things that he has or hasn't achieved. I'm just saying, him entering our consciousness as the man he is. He wasn't known as a manager for that.
Running down the touchline at Old Trafford.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was then winning the Champions League. That was like, okay, this is a household name now.
And I also remember, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I also remember him, I think, and I'm going to cop a bit of flack here, this is wrong, I think I remember him being quite close to going to Liverpool.
Yeah,
and they went
rumors.
For Benitez instead.
Right,
and he was, I think it was Liverpool or Chelsea. And I think at one point he was looking more likely to go to Liverpool.
Well, that's the
funny
thing.
And he had a meeting with Abramovich, I think, and that changed it for him.
That would have been a really interesting fit because no one is bigger than Liverpool.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Chelsea were a bit of a, you know.
Well, they were the nouveau riche, weren't they? What was interesting at the time is, do you remember, Abramovich was seemingly very publicly weighing up whether he wanted Mourinho or Deschamps. Because they were the new kids on the block with all this money, and they were like, all right, we'll just get the manager that wins the Champions League this year. Could you imagine? Imagine if they'd gone for Deschamps.
But don't you think that, as Pete just mentions there, that's a wonderful sliding doors moment, that.
If
I don't know how serious the approach was, how close he came, I have no insight into that, but it was mentioned. And imagine if he had gone there, it would have been an amazing sliding doors moment.
Well, the fact is they went for Benitez, is interesting.
He did well for them.
And does Mourinho kind of look at that and go, I'd have done better? Jonathan Wilson.
Yes, he definitely does.
Jonathan Wilson's written very eloquently about Mourinho over the years and summed it up very nicely by saying Mourinho's career seems to be one long revenge plot.
Yes. Yeah.
And it comes from that moment with Barcelona. Since 2007, Mourinho's managed Inter, Real Madrid, Chelsea again, and now Manchester United. Very impressive CV, of course. He's come a hell of a long way. I think that is something we can all agree. Many, many moments in the last 10 years, of course. But Jonathan Wilson really does highlight that the revenge plot can be traced back to the time when Mourinho and Guardiola both applied for the Barcelona job after Frank Rijkaard. Mourinho was deemed not one of them, even though his CV was far more impressive.
And he'd worked there.
Yeah, and he'd worked there, exactly. Now, I know Guardiola had more recently worked there, but you're right, Jim. He felt like this is...
I'm not one of the boys.
But I thought I was.
Yeah, exactly.
Betrayal.
He would be the one who liaises with Pep Guardiola, and Pep would be looking after the Catalan kind of contingent inside Barcelona when he was a player. So that fantastic sort of dynamic, and narrative's just got to carried on.
Yeah, absolutely right.
How do you think, though, the way Jonathan Wilson says that?
Yes.
Would you argue then that completely informs everything about the way Mourinho conducts himself and acts and behaves, because he is quite.
That's what Jonathan says. I'm
interested in the development of his character, because just to go back to that documentary again, there's one bit in it. I mean, he is like the golden boy of English football. Mm. Don't forget that.
Completely.
He's an absolute villain half the time now, but he was the golden boy.
And we wanted him as England manager.
Yeah.
There was one point in that documentary where he's obviously just won the league. He's younger. He's more handsome. All the rest of it. And they show footage of a press conference, and he says a couple of things. And at the end, he says, and of course, I know the British press don't really like me very much. As like a half, like as a joke. And you hear grown adult journalists saying, no, we do, Jose, we do.
Yeah.
And they were desperate for his approval.
And that's what changed, I think, for me. That his effect on the press and the way we report managers, the managers we sort of like, I think, completely changed with him, because he was just one of the... To be honest, his personality almost overtook the fact that Chelsea spent so much money. Like, they spent a ridiculous amount
of
money.
He was like a lightning rod.
But he managed to kind of like...
He's always spent money where he's gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So. And that's an important point to make.
And that's never been the story, really. It's Jose Mourinho. It's Jose Mourinho. Yeah. He's just being
himself. Yeah. And what I think is fascinating about that, and actually his background as a translator makes all the sense in the world, because I don't think he was even hired as a translator. He was just sort of known as that, wasn't he? That was a big part of what his role there, but it wasn't just that. Is his use of language is absolutely devastating. When he took over at Inter, he did his first press conference all in Italian, claimed he learned it in 3 weeks, which is probably nonsense and Mourinho sort of cult building. But he can, he plays managers off against each other all the time. All the mind game stuff we talk about, like he can do that in 5 different languages. And we kind of overlook what a difficult thing it is to get inside a person's head and psychologically affect them. Like Mick McCarthy can't do that. No, you know what I mean? Jose Mourinho can play the press in a way that will affect actions on the pitch, which is staggering.
He's like some sort of shadowy figure from a Bond film, where you think he helped Bond there, but now he's doing something. You don't know what he's going to do.
He's taken from Ferguson the idea, as we've talked about before, the press conference before and the press conference afterwards are part of the game.
Mm. Yeah.
So he can't win the game on the pitch, but he can win those aspects of
the game. He sees the press conference as an extension of the match.
But why do you think, knowing that we've covered Mourinho for years and years, why do you think that he inspires such, as you said earlier, his box office, why does he inspire such attention beyond the fact... Because Carlo Ancelotti doesn't inspire it, and Carlo Ancelotti's won
as much
and more.
Ancelotti's not looking for it. I think that's the key thing. He needs this.
But why isn't he just not ignored?
Well, because he's a John McEnroe type, in the sense that he shoots his mouth off sometimes. He's very, very charismatic. Mm. He's likable at times. But he wins.
He's also not ignored because he creates situations that demand a response.
But he's also one of the best managers
in the press. And
he's one of the best managers in modern times. Let's not forget. His CV is very impressive.
The difference between Jose and Ancelotti is that Ancelotti, it's not part of his game to play the press, but Jose Mourinho, it very much is. That's that siege mentality that he gets off on, that he really, really uses to his advantage. 9 out of 10 times works for him.
Yeah, and also his sarcasm as well is a big part of his interview technique.
Let's not forget the guy's a massive prick.
but a lot of players disagree with you. A lot of players absolutely love him, though.
Oh, the loyalty he inspires in his players would absolutely be what I would determine.
But with regards to the press,
it would be Clough-esque.
Yeah, totally.
But when he left Inter and people were in tears.
Materazzi, incredible. But with his press stuff, when Chelsea had won the league, I think Guardiola was still at Bayern at the time. Mourinho started saying, well, maybe I'll go to a country where the kit man can be the coach and win the title. Maybe I need to be smarter, but I still enjoy these difficulties. And it's the sort of the fake deprecation of his own character and his own achievements and all that kind of stuff. But it's always veiled as a dig at someone else.
It's these pepperings of insults at other managers. Like sometimes he digs at Arsene Wenger for no reason, like, quite famously. He does it to Guardiola as well. And like times where it has nothing to do with those other managers, but it's just keeping them on edge, isn't it? Yeah. It's maintaining that hold over them.
He makes it all about himself, and even when. Sometimes when his team plays, he goes out to prove a point. I mean, look at the whole parking the bus. We now say parking the bus because it's in reference to when they went to Liverpool and spoiled the party. Mm. And that season he was going on about saying that Chelsea were a little horse or something. They're two bigger horses or something like that.
Didn't parking the bus come from him accusing other teams of doing it?
It did, to start with.
Yeah. And then obviously he was clearly doing it as well.
But he doesn't care. He wouldn't. Some managers would abhor that. They would find it embarrassing that he put sort of 9 men inside his own box against Liverpool.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a damn because they won. Mm. And I think that's it. That's the whole kind of anti-Barcelona.
The end justifies the means.
Yeah, but it's the whole anti-Barcelona thing. Barcelona trying to go out and entertain people, as Jonathan Wilson writes about. Pep Guardiola, we saw this season so far, saying, oh, we just want to entertain people and so on. Mourinho, he's almost like, no, I'm sick and tired of that. You've got to win and I'll bloody well show you. And that's why he's kind of fraught, because he's almost trying to say, why do people not talk about my teams as playing the right way? Because we go out there and win. He's a great pragmatist.
Here's a question for you then, Marcus. Mm. If you look in varying degrees, he's been a manager for a long time now. I think he's won his first league title in 2003 or something. He's always won in varying degrees wherever he's been. So obviously Porto, Chelsea, Inter, Real Madrid. I mean, even at Real Madrid, he won the cup and the league. What happens when he stops winning? What happens when he doesn't win?
Well, absolutely.
What happens at the end of this season when he probably doesn't win the Premier League and his third season is next season? He's 54, I think. He's never been at a club longer than 3 years. If he goes this season, it's a big if, but if he goes this season and next season without winning the league,
yeah.
What then happens? Are we entering a new era of Mourinho now where he's almost, as I said before, Mourinho the excuse maker?
Quite possibly. We're going to talk more about Mourinho, perhaps a bit more about that after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
My players deserve it. Chelsea fans deserve it. I want to say it again. Referees are afraid to give...
candy canes!
It's true.
Fitting. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I remember when he said that.
It's
about
good,
the
to
candy
have,
canes.
Good to have a genuine quote from the man himself in the middle of this episode, I think.
Completely backed. Yeah.
We, of course, have chosen our 12 that we're counting down. Number 6 is the cult of Jose Mourinho. He could hardly be left out, could he? But we'd love to hear from you as well. Get in touch with your favourite moments since 2007. And on Christmas Eve... well, you probably know by now if you listen to all of them. We're going to choose our favourite one, which will win a 55-inch 4K HD TV from our friends at Toshiba. In addition to that, we'll also record your suggested moment in the new year. Toshiba offers you the chance to watch every football match in 4K picture clarity. Thanks to the TV's pinpoint sharp resolution, no detail, no flick or kick of the ball will ever be missed. Enjoy 24/7 access to a whole world of online content, including catch-up TV and on-demand services such as Netflix. You can also access last week's shows on demand with FreeView Play. And for an authentic audio experience, it also comes with a...
Subwoofer!
To project that bass sound.
Oh, yeah.
Don't just hear, but feel the roar of the crowd. So for your chance to win, email in with your favourite moment or your suggestion from 2007 onwards to show@thefootballramble.com. Pete.
Feel the roar of that Sunderland fan's bot.
Oh, yeah. No, a late entry.
A late entry.
Quite literally.
Yeah. That's a subwoofer for anything. Yeah,
I'm not sure we can stretch to 25 minutes on that.
No. Yeah, it's more of an exit than entry. Yeah.
Having said that, we've already done double that on the show already.
Back to Mourinho. You are right to ask that question, Luke, because
the
Mourinho...
question before the break, Marcus.
That's right, yeah.
People probably have forgotten about now. I'm not doing it again.
No.
Rewind it.
Uh-huh. You asked me what was my favourite outfit that Jose Mourinho
wore. That was it, yeah. That's right.
But Mourinho, he did have seemingly a bit of magic in his sort of tactical methods and so on. I love that time when Chelsea played Barcelona and he sat back quite arrogantly and said, well, this would be this Barcelona starting lineup, named it, and he was spot on a day before the game.
Actually really enjoy that.
It was great. Time, yeah. But Inter, when Inter, he's, I mean, won the treble with Inter. I mean, we could do a whole, you know, one of these on that alone. But he said when Inter played Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, before the game,
Bridge.
I don't know what happened there.
Hey, guys.
I still had that sort of fashion.
I did not hit her.
There are many radio shows where that would have gone uncommented on. Yeah. This is not one of those radio shows.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Mother, is that you?
Get to the bridge.
I'll meet you at the bridge.
Yeah,
take it to the bridge.
Oh dear, what have I done? He said before the game, I usually get what I want at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
And they won the game.
Oh, he's so clever with things like that. I mean, a great example again is I think that's him sort of just using his own aura, isn't it, to sort of instill fear in the opponent.
I think there's more than that. I think he's that confident tactically. It goes back to what we were talking about when he used to give dossiers of information to Bobby Robson and all. It's a bit of a shame with Mourinho because recently it is all about the off-field stuff, which is perhaps... maybe evidence that he's possibly losing his magic because he's now reaching for the kind of, I suppose, for want of a better term, dirtier tricks.
Well,
and
if you look at, I think he's a victim of his own success.
Yeah,
obviously, no manager can keep up that level of performance at different clubs. I think if Alex Ferguson had moved around as much as Jose Mourinho, I think he'd have had trouble as well. But I think the way he treated the Eva Caneiro stuff, I think the way he treats Luke Shaw this season, I think he's
Iker Casillas,
Luke Moore. Well, he's treated me as well.
It's terrible.
I think he's he can be shown to be quite callous and unsafe.
I think he's ruthless. No, I don't think I would defend any of those examples actually because I didn't agree with them at the time. And
apart
from
the Luke Moore one,
yeah, the Luke Moore one's absolutely fair. I'll take that one on the chin. But he's ruthless, and it's not an excuse to say, oh, he's a winner, so that thing's happened. You should treat people with respect. You should be respectful whenever you can. But whatever Mourinho, he's just a walking charisma machine. Yes. Whatever he does, right or wrong, it will be commented on over and over again. And you know, at the time of we're recording this, just before Christmas, we're in the aftermath of this tunnel bust up between Man United and Man City. Man United, you know, lost that game, of course. I saw people on Twitter, journalists, saying everyone who complains that all we're doing is talking about Mourinho's role in this tunnel bust up needs to understand that the three or four articles or whatever it was we published on that have been the most read articles this year about football by a mile, an absolute mile. People care more about that than they do about the game, and the numbers bear that out. So whatever he does, he knows he's got it, rightly or wrongly. And to be fair to him, he can take the pressure. I mean, he invites it on himself constantly. He's got the press, rightly or wrongly, wrapped around his finger. Even if they criticise him, he still wins because it deflects away from the big story he doesn't want you to read about.
I'm not so personally invested in Jose Mourinho that I want to read about everything he does, but I do read about everything he does because I want to stay informed with what's current in the news. And he makes himself that.
Yeah, it's true.
It's an excellent point.
Trumpesque.
But I think very much so.
Going back to...
Imagine if Jose was on Twitter. He's not on Twitter, is he?
I don't think so. We'd know about it if he was. But Mourinho, that charismatic personality of his, that goes with his tactics. When he was at Inter, to talk about that just a little more, he managed to get the likes of Samuel Eto'o and Pandev to play in a front three with Milito, Diego Milito, up front. He basically got Eto'o to do Milito's doggies. This is Samuel Eto'o, who won the treble with Barcelona.
Certainly one of the most decorated African players of all time.
He manages to persuade him to play on a wing, a functional, almost like defensive winger. And Eto'o's happy to do it.
He's loving it.
That is, it's incredible. And not just Eto'o, but there's other examples.
He inspires amazing loyalty in his players. Yeah. Jonathan Wilson, again, to quote someone far more learned than I about it, said he told us, didn't he, it might have been on the continent or somewhere else, that he said the season that Eden Hazard's form dropped off a cliff, where the season that Mourinho eventually got fired, at the end of the season, apparently Hazard was texting Mourinho, apologising, saying, I'm sorry I couldn't live up to your standard and all the rest of it. Even though the public perception was that Mourinho had just essentially downed tools.
Yeah.
And it had all gone like, you know, it's all like that scene in Apocalypse Now where everything's on fire. Like, Hazard viewed that as his own fault that he couldn't live up to Mourinho's standards, and I find that absolutely fascinating.
An abusive father. The one thing,
I would say he's different to Trump, and you use the Trump analogy like, as a joke. I know he's far more measured
and better looking.
Oh, definitely, but he's far more measured. I think he holds a level of control over everything he does, even more than we realise.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look at the timeline of that after he was sacked from Chelsea, they were hovering above the relegation zone, and he just walks into the Man United job. Walks into the biggest football
club.
Well,
I think, but he lives in that tension, doesn't he? So when he came,
Lily had all of its gild pulled off it. But he
lives in that tension, and now that tension worked for the most part at Chelsea in the first spell, and then in the second spell, worked at Inter as well. Because as you said earlier, Pete, when he left Materazzi, he was crying. I mean, to win that Champions League with Inter, you know, and when they beat Barcelona as well, with that celebration running on the pitch, it was such an amazing achievement. But to live in that tension of trying to G the players up in a certain way. Frank Lampard, I think, said recently that he would try and goad you into becoming a better player. Now, that's sort of sink or swim stuff for a lot of players. Some players will not like that. They want a more gentle approach or a more loving approach. And Mourinho, he can do this more sort of loving approach, if for want of a better term. But he can also be quite brutal, as Luke says. Now, the problem is when that tension breaks, it breaks.
Oh, he's admitted as well.
And it's usually in the third season.
Yeah, he's admitted as well that he can only work with certain types of personality. Like, he finds it very hard to get his ideas across and to empathise with the younger generation coming through now. And he used that in the context of Marcus Rashford. He said Rashford is like an old player. He's like an old school type player. His attitude, his focus is completely different.
You can tell that in interviews.
And that's why he trusts him. Right. Mourinho only works with players he trusts. And that manifests itself usually with more experienced type players being used more often than younger
But sometimes
players.
With those experienced players, he can come in and go, right, you think you're the big boy around here, Mr. Casillas, you're off.
Yeah, on the other side of that is Mr. Ibrahimovic, you're the greatest player that's ever lived. Because that's what he needs.
That's a good...
I mean, on paper, you wouldn't think those two people would get on, but they love each other.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
So, because we're sort of coming towards the end of this, what do... What era of Mourinho do you think we're moving into now? Because I think it's really interesting to push up on that point about what happens. He's arguably the biggest club in the world, certainly the second biggest club in the world. If he doesn't, I know he's won the Europa League, but they need Premier League titles. He's been tasked with bringing the Premier League title back to Old Trafford after their problems after Ferguson left. What era of Mourinho are we moving into now? Is it Mourinho the excuse maker? Mourinho the sort of, not joke figure, because he'll never be that, but he's certainly more of a joke figure now. He's more the people love to hate now than he was then. Mm-hmm. And there's that classic quote in the thick of it of Malcolm Tucker where Steve Fleming says to him, "You've gone from the man people love to hate to the man people just hate."
Yeah.
Is Mourinho in danger of going into that road now, do you think?
Well, there's a danger with the behaviour that it becomes almost like a parody.
And there's nothing to justify because he's not in the tribes as well. Yeah.
Well, I think with Mourinho, now at Manchester United, they are slightly more similar to, say, Real Madrid than they would be more similar to Inter or Chelsea, I would argue. Real Madrid, obviously, are just on a different level to most other clubs for many reasons. Now, Mourinho could create that siege mentality at Chelsea. They were happy to go with him on that. They wanted him back, and he did go back there. At Inter, they would have him back as well. With Real Madrid, again, trying to make it all about him, Real Madrid is not all about Jose Mourinho. Real Madrid is all about Real Madrid, if you know what I mean.
As is Man United.
Exactly. Not as fiercely as Real Madrid. But
I'd sort of say that, like, Real Madrid and Inter Milan and definitely Chelsea, they were never teams that dominated for, like, you know, 20 years. Manchester United.
Oh, Real Madrid.
No, but between them and Barcelona. But in the last 5 years, Barcelona.
Yeah, but this is my point, Peter. Real Madrid think they do. Right. When Barcelona win the title, Real Madrid think
that's a blip.
Well, that's just ridiculous. Right. And that's the point, is when he tried to do his Mourinhoism or his Mourinho show at Real Madrid.
I still think there's merit in what Pete says, because Real Madrid haven't dominated La Liga the same way United have dominated the Premier League in that window.
All right, fair enough. So,
I've got your back, mate.
Thanks, Lou. Thank you very much, Lou.
That's all right.
Well, when Mourinho won the league for the first time with Real Madrid for the first time in 4 years, they did it with a record points tally, with a record amount of goals scored, a record amount of away wins. This was the Pep Guardiola's Barcelona they managed to dethrone.
Yeah, but the point is, you're not answering my question, and I want you to answer it.
Okay, I'm getting there in a roundabout way.
So my point is, to put it another way, he's always had something to hang his hat on.
Yes.
So he can say that to you.
Yeah.
The points total, the goals scored. We won the league at Real Madrid. We broke Barcelona's monopoly on it. Mm-hmm. At Chelsea, we did this, we did that. At Inter, won the treble. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to get to the bottom of is, at some point, he's either going to retire or go into international management, which is difficult. Or he's going to go down in flames. And I want to know what you think.
Well, it could
is.
Go either way. There's one club still left that would be a good fit. Would be PSG. So he's still got that one to go.
He probably will go there thinking about it.
And it'll be very interesting. I mean, lest we forget, in his first season at Manchester United, he did win a treble.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was a part of the narrative as well.
Like, the difference between a treble and the treble is sizable in football, isn't it?
It's mad, though, isn't it? This is the first job really that he's gone into where he's not won the big prize.
So there you go, Pete. The answer might well be that he'll just say, "Well, I won the Europa League."
I think you're right.
I've got him back in the Champions League. Yeah, that's what I wanted.
I think you're right with international management being a thing. I think at one point he's going to run out of places to go to, and if PSG isn't an option after Man United, and I think we all assume he won't be there to create the legacy he says he wants to.
That's what he wants to do.
Yeah, but he says that. I don't know if we'll see that. I think he'll go into international management and he'll use that as a break to then come back refreshed into club football.
I reckon he'll dick around on a couple of different international jobs and then he'll take the England job.
One thing that Mourinho loves is to be loved. He wants to be loved, but he wants it too much. And it's almost like he's going around and going, "Do you love me? Why don't you love me? You should love me. Oh, you don't have enough to love me," sort of thing. And it's tiresome for a lot of people.
You don't have the character.
You don't have the character to love someone like me. It's tiresome. Now, when England, it was a number of years ago, when England became managerless again and Mourinho was being linked, Mourinho, it was one of the few times I can remember Mourinho actually being quite flattered and humbled. Mm. And he was a bit like, "Oh, yeah, well, maybe." And he thought, "My goodness, these people love me." And he loves nothing more. Because, as we spoke about with Barcelona, he felt rejected there. He's therefore trying to find people who go, "You're our man." And he's not quite found that, really. Again, at Inter, but he didn't like Italy. The Italian press in general, he said, I like Inter, but I don't like the rest of you sort of thing. And that was the end of that. But with regards to going back to Manchester United, it will be a very interesting one. He wants to create a legacy. He wants to. It's the one thing in his career he doesn't have. He wants to have a bit of longevity where he can say, I was at that club for, you know, 6 or 7 years maybe, which is a long time in modern football.
And I turned Marouane Fellaini into a footballer.
Exactly. But in that style of management he had, in that tension, is it possible? I'm not sure it is, you know, but we will have to wait and see.
One thing's for sure, his shadow has always loomed large over the world of football in the last 10 years. No
but the
question.
Fact is, though, that he's in not just the same league, the same city as Pep Guardiola, his old foe. And Pep Guardiola is getting the better of him this season. So it will be fascinating how Mourinho tries to outdo him this time.
And Guardiola is probably the only one who would push Mourinho close as a manager who's defined this era.
Very much so.
Both on and off the pitch.
Absolutely right, gentlemen. Absolutely right. We leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to number 6 of our 12 Rambles of Christmas. A daily countdown of what we see as the 12 defining topics in football since we began the football ramble in 2007. I mean, there was so much of Mourinho there we could have talked. There's lots of his career you just can't simply cover.
No, exactly. It's
and that's why he's in there.
But do get in touch with your suggestions of your favourite moment from 2007 onwards. Show at thefootballramble.com. Try and get through that peak filter. Yep. Win that competition. Win that Toshiba TV. And the chance to have your show recorded. And we'll see you again tomorrow.
Lovely. Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, BT.
Bye.
Bye, Lukey.
Goodbye.
Bye from me.
It's Christmas!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.